puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
So where will we go today on Abandoned Manitoba with Gordon Goldsboro of the Manitoba Historical Society? Welcome back, Gordon.
Good morning, Terry.
You gave a very cryptic clue last time you were here. And your clue was, think of a mashup between a wild drinking spree and a play by Shakespeare. I couldn't guess.
Well, I had to really think long and hard about that one too. What I was referring to was a small community in the Interlake called Bender Hamlet.
Okay, that's good. So what's special about Bender Hamlet?
Well, it's actually one of the very few Jewish farm communities in Manitoba. There weren't very many of them, and most of them didn't do very well, so they're not well known.
So tell us more about Bender Hamlet and how it came to be.
Okay, well, it was started, in fact, where it gets its name from, Bender, is from its founder, a fellow named Jacob Bender. He came to Canada from the area we now call the Ukraine. He arrived here in about 1892. And he had all kinds of, I guess, work that he was involved with. He was not himself a farmer, but I guess he had aspirations to establish a farming community. So in 1902, he went to England, and there he recruited a bunch of people who I guess had ended up in England from Eastern Europe, or what we would call now Eastern Europe, who wanted to emigrate to Canada. And he gave them all kinds of wonderful ideas about, you know, the quality of the farmland and the opportunities for people. So he convinced them to come and establish a farming community. Now, the interesting thing was that the people he was recruiting were not generally farmers. In fact, among the group that he recruited, there were merchants, there were tailors, there were woodworkers, peddlers, carpenters. There were a couple apparently that were gardeners, but that was about as close to farming as it got.
How big did Bender Hamlet get?
Well, he recruited 18 families to come, and that's pretty much, as I understand it, as large as it ever got. He got a quarter section of land in the Interlake.
160 acres, right?
That's right. Not a large piece of land. Mm-hmm. But because of the nature of the culture that these people were coming from, they didn't want to settle in the traditional way that the Canadian government wanted them to. Typically, people would be given quarter sections, and one family would stake out that quarter section and another family on the neighboring quarter section and so on. They wanted to stick together, so they got permission to establish a somewhat different way of doing it. They took the one original quarter section and they divided it into 19 strips, long, narrow strips. And the idea was that each family that arrived would get one of those strips, and then the 19th one was for a synagogue. But the idea was then that they were actually all together, each of the houses. Well, in fact, the only picture I've ever seen of Bender Hamlet shows this long row of 18 houses side by side, basically, each on their little strip of this quarter section. And in this way, they could then create a sort of a cohesive community, as opposed to what would have happened otherwise. They would have been all spread over the countryside, and they would have been, you know, sometimes miles apart from other families.
I forgot to ask exactly where was Bender Hamlet.
Well, it was in the Interlake. It's only about 2 miles east of the little community of Narses.
Known for?
Well, of course, it's snake pits quite abundantly there. It's about 21 miles, I guess, sort of northwest of Gimli. And it's about equidistant between Lake Manitoba and Lake Winnipeg. It's right smack dab in the middle of the Interlake.
What happened to the community?
Okay, well, they arrived. They started to farm. They weren't especially experienced farmers. In fact, a lot of them had come from an area of Europe where they had been prohibited from owning land and as a result couldn't acquire the kind of skills that you would need to become a farmer. So that was sort of strike one. They arrived in an area that was not especially good land. I mean, even today, I think people will acknowledge that it's not the best farmland there, a lot of stones and other things. So you have poor farmers, you have poor land. And then unfortunately, they arrived at a time when there wasn't an awful lot of opportunity. There was no railway in the area. And of course, railway is absolutely essential if you wanted to take your goods to market. It was also a fairly remote area. You know, one of the things about the community they wanted to establish is that they wanted to preserve their Jewish culture. And this meant, for example, that they had to have a quorum of men for religious observances. And unfortunately, if the community diminished in any way, if there were fewer people, it made it that much harder to keep going. And so, in fact, when people began to leave, the more people that left, the harder it became to maintain the remaining culture. You know, there were fewer potential mates if you wanted to marry. There weren't enough people to form the quorum for these religious rites. And I think ultimately what did them in was that they had a successive few years of bad weather, you know, where their crops were all destroyed by rain. And so by the time you got into the late 1920s, only, you know, 20-some years after they had established this community, I think the last of them sort of said, okay, we've had enough. And they moved in back into Winnipeg. In fact, many of the people who had originally settled there, and of course, had careers that were probably better suited to life in the city, ended up in Winnipeg or other places all across Canada.
I looked at the photo on your website of these unique, these 18 houses with an interesting roof line to them. Mm-hmm. What remains on the site now?
Well, the houses themselves are gone, although I'm told that they had used little stones as sort of markers between the individual lots, these strips that they had divided the land into. Many of those are still visible. And there's also a small cemetery. Now, of course, inevitably, when people live in a community, then some of them are going to pass away and they would be buried in the cemetery. In this case, because so many years elapsed from the time that the community was abandoned to the present, back in the 1960s, I'm told, somebody was in there sort of bushwhacking and came across a very overgrown cemetery. They knew it was a cemetery because there was some stones that were still visible.
Like gravestones, yeah.
Gravestones, and they had Hebrew characters on them, which was kind of unusual. And so in the aftermath, they've kind of constructed a sort of a concrete fence around the cemetery today. So it's actually very nicely maintained. You can actually see that as well as these rows of stones that marked where the houses used to be.
Hmm. Bender Hamlet.
Bender Hamlet.
Okay. Well, where are we going next week?
Well, I have to say, one of my absolute all-time favorite books is entitled Sunshine Sketches of a Little Town.
Oh, yes. Stephen Leacock.
Stephen Leacock. That's right. And so next week, we're going to be visiting a house that has a very close connection to Mr. Leacock.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. I look forward to that. Gordon, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Terry.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many